Hi and welcome to episode 8 of The Office Block, the podcast for people working in banking and financial services with me, Paul Dillon. If you haven't yet taken our survey, the survey of the Financial Services Union, supported by us here on the Office Block podcast, you can do so still. The survey is at yoursayonfinance.org, and our hashtag for participating in the survey is hashtag yoursayonfinance. Really big response rate to the survey. It's designed to get an insight into the issues that affect people working in the sector. We really encourage you to take it if you haven't already done so. Our guest today is Susie Byrne. Susie's a well-known disability rights activist, a frequent media contributor, and she's on Twitter at susieb.ie. Susie works for the National Advocacy Service for People with Disabilities, and she's a board member of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties and Irish Rail. We're talking today about disability at work, and Susie, great to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's good to join you.
Susie, we've just been talking there before we came on air about your background in activism, and you have a very long history of a background in activism for the rights of people with disabilities. For our listeners, you might just tell us how you came to be involved in this in the first instance.
Well, I would have been involved in equality politics a lot during the 1990s. I was very involved in the lesbian and gay movement, and I would have been involved in the campaign to decriminalise homosexuality in 1993. And we then moved on to equal status campaigning. So that was a campaign for equality laws. And we would have worked together with disabled people, women's movement, trade unions, travellers. And I suppose I became more confident around my own identity as a disabled person around that time. I was also more challenged by my health deteriorating. But I met other disabled people and other disabled activists. And that very much happens for disabled people, in that they often go on a journey around their identity because there's been such a issue of shame around disability and invisibility. And people not feeling confident about themselves or supported, or not having role models or people they can identify with. So I got involved in lots of disability rights campaigning and organisations of people with disabilities trying to form their own supports, you know, and campaign groups. And we move now, I suppose, like to 20, 25 years later, and I'm still involved in trying to support people with disabilities to come together and speak out for themselves. And a lot of that is using online methods as well, and building communities online of people, and then trying to raise disability issues and the consciousness around disability amongst able-bodied people and general campaigns, and reminding the people of the fact that there are 14% of the population have a disability, and many people know people with disabilities. So it is a much bigger issue than people think.
Yeah. And in terms of people speaking up for themselves, the ways of communicating now are so different than when you first came into activism. Has that made all of this a lot easier?
I think we're now seeing people with disabilities speaking out and saying what's not fair anymore. And that's great to see that they have those channels that they can do that. Yeah. Now, the other there are challenges about social media and the current time we are living in that people are using things to tell stories, often in a way that isn't coming from disabled people's mouths. So you hear a lot of campaigns and viral stories about people with disabilities, and it isn't coming from the perspective of the disabled person. It's coming from the perspective of the campaign or the family member or somebody going, oh, this is terrible, we need to raise money for somebody. And that's not, for me and for many other people, the issue about our rights isn't to the fore then. We become charity cases, you know, GoFundMes for wheelchairs or, you know, all those sort of things, rather than people telling the state, the government, other people what people should be getting, you know, and campaigning that way. But I think more and more people are, there's been something in the last few months that I've been really enjoying, which is a hashtag called Things Disabled People Know. And people have been pointing out the ways in which they're being discriminated against in daily life, and assumptions are being made. And you're seeing people speaking out more, you know, and whether it is about the fact that they can't get the assistance that they need to take transport, or if it's a housing issue or an employment issue, people are speaking out a bit more. But the laws aren't there to support people either in getting the things that they want. Yeah. You know, so people's expectations sometimes grow, but they can't get the solutions to their problems.
And in terms of the approach, again, just from talking to you before we came on air, you mentioned the social model and you mentioned the charity model. Mm-hmm. So it's a case of people organising for their rights rather than having things done for them and on their behalf.
Absolutely, and it's taking the perspective that it is actually society that is disabling us rather than us as disabled people being the problem that need to be fixed.
Yeah.
And that's the way in which I think people need to look at the issue of disability as a civil rights issue. And as the fact that if you make society more accessible for people with disabilities, you improve the lives of far more people other than disabled people. So yeah. Maybe when it is down to physical access, if you make doors easier to open, that helps other people, parents, you know, with buggies are often sighted, you know, but generally it just helps make things, if you have universal access, it just makes life easier for everybody.
Yeah.
And I suppose this, the charity model has come up through because, you know, we were in a recession for such a long time that people were told you'll get what we're able to give you and that's it. And so, you know, and people were told, well, there's nothing that we can do about supporting people to move into their own housing, or, you know, there are special pilot schemes, but it wasn't a general across the board access for people to various things like employment. So we're even seeing, you know, there were special routes into jobs for disabled people. That stopped now. What does that mean? Where disabled people are competing against able-bodied people for employment. Mm. You know, and people are becoming disabled when they're in work. And that has to become an issue for the workplace being accommodating for people, yeah, rather than the disabled person having to change or prove themselves more. And that's very often what disabled employees try and do, to prove themselves more and be grateful for the job they have because they're afraid of losing it.
Yeah. I mean, let's get into that, Susie, because the rights of people with disabilities at work. As you know, the Financial Services Union has members throughout the island of Ireland, and these issues are important to us. But I want you to outline to us, what are the rights for people with disabilities at work?
Well, you have a right not to be discriminated in the workplace in the Republic under the Employment Equality Acts. However, your employer, you know, only has to do something, you know, is covered by reasonable accommodation.
Mm.
So they can make some accommodations for you if they do not cost too much. And what too much is depends on what the person in the Workplace Relations Commission might decide or what society has indicated is too much. There are accommodations and assistance that employees can get in workplaces, and the Department of Social Protection or Employment Affairs and Social Protection has several schemes available to support people. The first one I'd mention really would be where you might not be able to perform to the same level as your able-bodied colleagues. Your employer can apply for funding to compensate them for that, and then that means that you get employed at the same rate as your able-bodied colleagues. So that could be where people have particularly significant conditions. The other things that are available are workplace accommodation grants. So where, you know, if there are monies needed to provide you with equipment that you might need, or, you know, an adaptation, it's a workplace adaptation grant. So it might be some other thing that needs to be adapted. Those things are available. But they're the hard things. You know, they're the actual schemes that are there. But there are soft, what I would call softer things, where employers have, you know, work with employees to provide them with flexible working times. And those things don't cost money, hugely amount of money, you know, and they can be seen very much as reasonable accommodations. So that you have later starting times or earlier finishing times, and also where, you know, employees might need time off for appointments or other things that they need. Or they might need somebody in the workplace to do something for them, to open a door or to, you know, ensure that there are no trips and slips and around if people have difficulty walking. All of those very common sense stuff,
yeah.
You know, that can be done in such a way that it doesn't draw attention to people. And I think there's an issue, I suppose, important that people also realise that some people don't like it being known that they have a disability. Disclosing your disability is a huge issue in work for some people, and we need to work to make employers and workplaces friendly places for people to be. You don't need to be going around wearing the big sign in your head saying, look, I am a disabled person, you know, but it should be a place where, you know, if you do need support, you know, and need something done differently so that you can work to your best, that should be able to be done, yeah. You know.
And what would that involve? Because I suppose you're conscious when I'm talking to you that in your, say, journey as an activist, you would have once seen the time where we had, you know, the sheltered workshops.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, a lot more. You mentioned 14% of people of the population with a disability. What is the percentage of people who have a disability who are out of work?
Well, depending on your disability, I mean, like, there are 640,000 people with a disability in Ireland, but yeah. They are indicating that somewhere between 60 and 70% of disabled people are not in work.
Okay.
That figure is changing, luckily, and I think things have become much better. And we're now seeing people who traditionally would not have been in the workplace working, and people in particularly on the autism spectrum are now involved in, you know, very complex, rightly so, you know, involved in workplaces. But we're now seeing lots of companies realise the value of having people with disabilities working in organisations, and realising that it isn't difficult, because that's the other thing. I think that it was an issue that people thought, oh, people can't do jobs, they can't work in areas. But now we're realise that the accommodations are not huge, that people can work. The other thing, I suppose, to mention though, is that people are acquiring disabilities.
Yeah.
We are living longer. We are becoming disabled. And so people have expectations that, where possible, that they would stay and work with their disability. Disability is a broad term. It covers mental health as well, under the Disability Act. We have to remember that mental health is a huge issue affecting, you know, some would say 1 in 4 in the population. Yeah. That means 1 in 4 employees who need, you know, to look after their health and support to do so. And maybe the issue might go away, but for some people, living with mental health conditions is a lifelong issue.
Yeah.
And it's an issue where it's difficult to bring up in work. People, the stigma still remains. But, you know, employers do have a legal responsibility to ensure that people are provided with the supports.
Yeah.
And we need to address those issues and realise that the numbers of people with disabilities are growing.
Yeah.
And that means that workplaces have got to change and grow and adapt as well.
You mentioned there the word stigma. Can you elaborate just a little bit about that? And what could it mean, you know, stigma in the workplace in terms of people with disabilities or people with a mental health difficulty?
In the workplace, it could mean that people who, you know, may have to take time off because of their disability would feel embarrassed or ashamed of that, or maybe put under pressure. And so, you know, having to negotiate with employers and it becoming an issue. I suppose there are also issues, you know, for some people with some medical conditions, it can be, you know, quite embarrassing, you know. Unless there is understanding, and also facilities available, you know, where people, I'm thinking of people I know that have bowel conditions and things like that, you know, and it's just making sure that those accommodations are available for people if they need them. But also, you know, being a disabled person and visible around your, and a lot of disabilities are invisible, but I mean, I know that a lot of disabled people feel looked at, you know, and under inspection,
okay,
you know, a lot. And I think people probably, you know, in the financial sector are working with members of the public hugely, you know, and there's a lot of equality and diversity training going on in workplaces, and hopefully that's covering disability so that people don't feel, whether they're employees or members of the public, any different to anybody else, and that, but that if they do need different supports, that they can get them. But you know, there's a thing called the disabled gaze,
right,
which is this thing where, you know, you get stared at, you know, if you're a disabled person out in public, because the people are watching you, you know, going, oh, I don't normally see people around. And I know it's something that I see a lot in public transport, people, you know, watching you, God, isn't it amazing what you can do with that scooter or with your wheelchair, you know, all this, have you got a driving license for that, all of those things that are said to you as a disabled person. You know, people wouldn't say those things to able-bodied people, or wouldn't think themselves so cheeky, you know. And so if people feel that they can talk to you about your disability maybe more and ask you questions, when it really isn't on, you know, you wouldn't do it in other circumstances.
Absolutely.
You know,
I mean, I suppose I'm really conscious when I'm talking to you that we only have a short time today, and there's so many issues that we could be discussing, should be discussing, and I hope maybe that we can come back to some of this, because I think this is a very interesting and important area. One piece of legislation that I wanted to ask you about is the Assisted Decision Making Act 2015. That may have some relevance for people who are working in finance and banking. Could you elaborate a little bit for our listeners on that, Susie?
Yeah, one of the things in Ireland, I suppose, over the years has been the fact that we have not had the appropriate infrastructure to assist people in making decisions. We have, if you are not able to make decisions for yourselves, the only thing that had been in place really was the 1870 Lunacy Act. And where a ward of court, you'd be made a ward of court in certain circumstances, and somebody would be made responsible for you. The other area, I suppose, was powers of attorney, where you would give permission to somebody else to make decisions on your behalf. So this new legislation brings in a framework of decision making for people, to assist people maybe to obtain information so that they can make a decision, or if they want to have somebody appointed to jointly make a decision with them, or if they aren't able to make any decisions for themselves at all in any way, that somebody would be appointed for them. That's called a decision making representative. So all of these areas are going to be brought in by this act. Now, it was passed in 2015. It hasn't been commenced yet. I think a lot of financial institutions are reviewing how they do things, whether people, you know, have the capacity to make decisions. Now, nobody, the capacity is something that, you know, can change from one day to the next. You mightn't be able to make a decision about what you want to eat one day, but the next day you'd be in far better form, you'd be able to make that decision. And this new legislation will actually look at the capacity as being something that is very fluid and that can change from time to time. And in the case of, say, somebody diagnosed with dementia, they may be able to make decisions for a certain period of time or with certain supports, but that might change somewhat, you know, later down the line. And so the law is there to support them during through those changes. So what, there's going to be lots of things about whether people can open bank accounts. Maybe they can do certain things in banking but not others. They might need a basic type of banking account. Some people, you know, would want an access to an ATM card or facilities to allow them to spend certain amounts of money, but maybe for bigger amounts of money or bigger decisions they might need further assistance. There are people who have money management plans and supports. They have supports of organisations to help them in making decisions. So, and one of the things that's happened up to now is that sometimes people have walked into financial institutions and said, I am the person's guardian, I make all those decisions. And they had no right to do that at all. So this legislation is going to change all of that. And the challenge will be for financial institutions and their staff is to support people in having the right to access services and have, you know, bank accounts and different things. But at the same time, to have protections in place so that people aren't exploited. And, you know, it's a changing place because so many of the population are covered by this, and because people become more disabled and, you know, especially in the area of dementia, with growing population. So it's a big challenge for employees and for organisations in how they're going to support people to have access to things, but at the same time have protection where needed.
Susie, you work for the National Disability Advocacy Service. Could you tell me a little bit about the work that you do there and the work in particular that you do around people in employment?
Okay. So the National Advocacy Service is funded by the Citizens Information Board, and our role is to provide independent representation and advocacy to people with disabilities, particularly to people who might be in institutional settings or in the community and who have no natural supports. And our role is to support people to speak up, to help them have information available so they can make decisions, maybe, you know, where they might be in a situation where they're going through a life change, moving into the community, or where, you know, maybe their rights are being infringed in some way. And in terms of employment, we would work with people sometimes who might have difficulties in the workplace, who might have problems, you know, be afraid about losing their jobs, or may not be able to access accommodations. And we might, if they have a difficulty in communicating that, support them or help them access supports through trade unions or other organisations, and maybe support them in cases that come before the Workplace Relations Commission where their rights have been infringed under the Employment Equality Act.
And briefly, can you just elaborate on the changes? Because again, you've mentioned before there has been a change in how cases are handled since the change into the WRC.
Yeah, previously the Employment Equality Act and the Equal Status Act cases would have been handled by the Equality Tribunal, but there was a change about 3 years ago where those cases then went into the Workplace Relations Commission, and they've become maybe slightly less visible because in the Workplace Relations Commission. But one of the things this, when you were going, you take a case to the Workplace Relations Commission under these types of legislation, it is supposed to be an informal, less formal setting. So it's not court, and you're supposed to be able to go in and represent yourself. But very often, the employers and the other side would have a lot of legal representation. So one of the difficulties we have seen is that often disabled people feel that they're not able to access legal representation. You shouldn't have to, because the adjudicator should be able to ensure that both sides are heard. But often, you know, you may not have had access to somebody who knows the case law, who can help you prove the case that you've been discriminated against, or, you know, provide that information. So it can be quite difficult. And I suppose one of the things a lot of us would like to ensure is that people who are taking those cases have good representation when they're going in, so that they feel supported. The other thing is, often it's a difficult place to be if you are a disabled person. One of the things I've had to negotiate is rest breaks during a hearing, so that people can, you know, take it easy if they get distressed. If, you know, they have a difficulty in speaking, communicating or hearing what's going on, so that that's accommodated in those hearings as well.
Susie, we could talk at length about this and other topics, I've no doubt. But for now, thank you for joining us on The Office Block, and we hope to have you back again.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul.
Before we finish the show, just a reminder of the Finance Worker Survey, which is available at yoursayonfinance.org. And you can promote the survey or promote your participation in the survey at #yoursayonfinance. Thanks, as always, for joining us on The Office Block, the podcast for people who work in banking and financial services. Don't forget to follow us online, The Office Block on Facebook and Instagram, and go to theofficeblock.org for updates and to engage further with us. Thanks for listening, and talk soon.